Let me speak in the name of God, the lover, the beloved, and the love sharer. Amen. We continue to mourn the events in Uvalde this past week. Our sense of outrage has been further stoked this weekend by the juxtaposition of optics. On the one hand, elementary school children talking of their need to have predetermined hiding places worked out in anticipation of being shot, and white men drooling over weapons of battlefield destruction at the NRA conference, held not only in the same week, but in the same state as the Uvalde tragedy. The evangelist Matthew, writing of Herod's slaughter of Bethlehem's newborn sons in the days following the birth of Jesus, quotes directly from the prophet Jeremiah. A voice is heard in Ramah, mourning and great weeping. Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more. Generations of our children continue to be traumatized by the unpredictable risk of being slain in the course of an ordinary school day, when school shootings become almost as common as school plays. Perhaps the writing is on the wall, if only we would but read it. When legislators owe a debt of fealty to the NRA in return for lavish campaign funding, enough will never be enough, ensuring that nothing will get done to make our country a safer place for innocent bystanders, safe for children in school, worshippers at prayer, concert goers and shoppers in the market. When, O Lord, will enough be enough? Today is the Sunday of the Memorial Day weekend, and remembering our theme of the fallen, the importance of memory in a society that seems to have a 24-hour cycle of memory. This past week, the staff have been preoccupied with the enormous task of clearing the offices in preparation for the long overdue renovation. And one of the challenges we've been grappling with has been how to deal with the accumulation of memories represented by the masses of archival material, whole filing cabinets full, the result of decades of shelving the problem by just ignoring it, cramming it into yet more filing drawers, or removing it to an even more chaotic document dump in a mildewing room under the stage of the Great Hall. Now, during my time as rector, the debate has continued unresolved between the archaeologist-minded and the pragmatists over not only what to save, but how much of it to save. Do you save everything? Do you make a representative selection? I'm not an archaeologist, so I tend towards the pragmatists. Some materials are emblematic of our history and must be preserved for posterity. Let me hasten that I am not speaking about the parish's official documents, the records, the registers, the minute books, the legal documents, which are all safely in the walk-in safe. The question is, in the drawers full of Sunday bulletins, past stewardship materials, and other yearly communication letters dating decades back, how much of this is necessary to save? I suspect the argument will remain unresolved. What's slightly aggravating from the pragmatist angle is that among those who argue for the preservation of everything, there is no one prepared to take on the archival task. Like so much else in contemporary parish life, we're long on opinions of what to do, but short on actual hands prepared to do it. Now, I began with this slightly comical reflection because it opens the way to a deeper reflection on what it means to remember. How to preserve a continuity of memory begs the question of not just what and how to preserve the memories, but what do the memories teach us? What are the lessons that we draw from the memories? The Memorial Day weekend betokens the promises of summer after the grueling experience of the New England winter. The three-day Memorial weekend is a godsend for many of us, and so I trust that families and friends will find time for well-needed recreation. However, the Memorial Day weekend evinces national memory, in particular the memory of the fallen in war, the men and women who gave their lives for the defense of the nation. In A Hobbit, A Wardrobe, and A Great War, Joseph LeConte, writing about the tenacity and courage of the ordinary British soldiers who endured the unspeakable horrors in the trenches of the Great War, writes, "Historians still debate the ultimate achievement of these soldiers and the cause for which they fought. Were they merely fodder for a vast and merciless military machine that ravaged Europe to no good end? Or did they play a vital role in halting aggression and preventing the dominance of a brutal and oppressive juggernaut over the continent?" LeConte locates the origins of Tolkien's vision for the hobbits and the role they played in confronting evil in his seminal Lord of the Rings epic. Tolkien, the soldier, lived among and fought alongside very ordinary men plucked from the shires and towns of the British Isles. He observes that the small people who fought and suffered in the Great War helped inspire the creation of unlikely heroes in Tolkien's greatest imaginative work. A nation's collective memory of war is a patchy thing. Some wars we like to remember, others we try to forget. And with the collective consciousness of a nation's war memories, there are conflicting lessons to be learned, and in the case of the repressed memories, lessons to be learned again and again and again. LeConte's words are applicable to the men who made up the armies of America's iconic war, the American Civil War, men plucked from the farms and towns of a nation barely 90 years old. It is said that there is no more brutal conflict than when fellow citizens, brothers, uncles, cousins, fathers, take up arms against one another. And as the armies of the Civil War crossed and recrossed each other in what must at the time have seemed an endless game of tug of war for territory and advantage, it was also the women, the children, the old men, not to forget the enslaved, who remained at home, who bore the brunt of this savage conflict in which they endured the horrors of war in the hope for something better. Flash forward to 2022, and LeConte's words can be reapplied to Ukraine's defense of their desire to exist. Raged against them once again are the forces of sacred violence, shaken well into a heady cocktail of Russian religious and imperialistic dreams. For this is a war that floods our 24/7 news feeds with the direct horror of war's savagery when waged against unarmed civilians, the men, women, and children of countless Ukrainian villages and towns. Yet despite the daily horrors of war, resistance to sacred violence is mobilizing the collective will of ordinary people, willing to bear the horrors of war in the defense of their hope of a future better than their past. Now, the Ukrainian experience is not unique. There are many places throughout the globe where ordinary people, small people, are standing in the face of unspeakable violence. But our support for Ukraine represents something beyond the conflict itself. It represents the nature of the conflict. A conflict the implications of which we cannot stand by and hope to remain unscathed. Memorial Day preserves our collective memory of war. Important as this is, more important is the question concerning the lessons to be drawn from such memories. 20-plus years of low-level insurgency wars in the Middle East are the result of drawing, in my opinion, the wrong lessons from the collective memories of war. To our cost, the withdrawal from Afghanistan only cemented the realization that perhaps we should not have been there in the first place. Afghanistan is the resurfacing, the deja vu experience of living through something we've lived through before. Vietnam, our war memory we've tried so hard to forget, and because we had convinced ourselves to forget, became Afghanistan. What we cannot remember, we are doomed to repeat again and again. But drawing the wrong conclusions from among the divergent war memories is the real danger. Despite some superficial appearances to the contrary, the Russian invasion of Ukraine is not 1914 again. It is not a European parochial entanglement that we can afford to sit out. It's 1939. It's a confrontation with a brutal and oppressive juggernaut in the hands of a regime that has no qualms in employing military power to maximum destructive effect. A regime inspired by the heady mix of religion and imperium, driven not only to subjugate its neighbors, but heedless of the huge sacrifice it is requiring from its own people. A regime for whom enough will never be enough. And we need to access the right memory if we are to avoid drawing the wrong lesson and heading off in the wrong direction. In A Hobbit, A Wardrobe, and A Great War, LeConte uncovers the sources of the hugely imaginative writings of Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. Both men enjoyed a strong friendship forged by their common experience in the First World War. Their friendship grew out of the mutual need to take the memory of the horror of their experience of war and sublimate it into imaginative works of fiction that hold in tension the horror of war with the hope for something better. Together, Tolkien and Lewis created a transgenerational rediscovery of faith and friendship and heroism, qualities so much in need today. Before the memory of the fallen, we must stand in silence. They shall grow not old as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. at the going down of the sun and in the morning. We will remember them. Amen.